Comics.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
This is Ivan Salvage.
Hey everybody, this is Joe L. J. Dirksen.
Hey guys, this is Jason the McDonald.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
It is Full Contact Fighter Radio time once again. I am your host, Kelsey Mowat, coming to you live from Vancouver, British Columbia. And joining me, as always, is my my colleague and partner in crime, Brendan Lear, from Edmonton, Alberta. Edmonton is his proud residence. Isn't that right, Brendan? You're very proud of
Edmontonian? Yes, that's true, yes. I'm proud of a lot of the historical accidents in my life.
Right, Ralphie. Of course. And you're headed out back to Saskatchewan next week, aren't you?
My homeland, my true homeland, the land of my birth. Yes, that's true. I'll be on holidays in glamorous Regina, Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm.
Spending some time with the family, doing some gambling,
enjoying the mountain ranges, you know. Enjoying the mountain ranges and all the beaches in Saskatchewan.
Yes, yeah. yes. There's some towering, pristine mountains in Saskatchewan.
Right.
Made of sand, actually.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, the sand hills. Yes, they're
one of the geographical and geological wonders of the world, Saskatchewan.
Yes, yes, it is.
Yeah. Today we've got another big show. We've got Johnny Alessio joining us. He's got a fight coming up against Nick Diaz, August 12th. The Warriors Cup, I believe, is the name of the event, held in Stockton, California. Nick Diaz's hometown. So we've got Alessio on the show to talk about that fight. That's a great welterweight matchup outside of the UFC. So I'm excited to talk to him about that. And then as well, we've got Ivan Salivary, who's coming off a recent win over Art Santori at the WFA King of the Streets event. So, Brendan, another couple intriguing and compelling guests, let's hope.
I think so. I think we got some good ones. I have no idea why. Obviously, our reputation is not preceding us. And I think the mark of our success will be having someone on twice. The same person on twice, because that will either demonstrate some credibility for us or some profound lack of judgment in the fighter.
Yeah, I would think that it would mark some sort of benchmark that we've been on the air long enough to actually have a guest on for two different appearances, or it could also mean that our show is so bad that no one's willing to appear on it except for a few fighters.
It's very difficult to measure these things. We're going to have to, get some consultants in, some sociologist or something.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to mention in the intro is that the WC went off July 28th. The Hitman was the name of the event, of course. We talked about this last show, proceeds going to Ryan Bennett. And just wanted to mention again that, you know, thanks to everyone that was involved in that event. And Wes Sims pulled out the win. Triangle choke for Wes Sims, 28 seconds in the first round.
And there was also a reported drop kick in the fight.
Yeah.
And the best news, of course, though, was that Ryan Bennett's wife was actually in attendance. So that's good to hear that she's out of the hospital, at least well enough to go out and support the show. And his kids were there as well, and extended family. So that sounds, from all accounts, it was a very good and successful event.
Yeah, and it's hopefully only the beginning of the help that's going to be going towards the Ryan Bennett Foundation to support his family. And, you know, one other fight I think that was, you know, maybe jumps out at people a little bit more was Alex Stiebling, who defeated Jason Guida with a unanimous decision victory. I guess that on the sporting side, on the MMA side of it, that's something that stands out a little bit more. Alex Stiebling, who had, you know, some success in Pride previously.
Yeah, that was actually a bit surprising.
So, yeah, props to all the people involved in that very important cause. And, yeah, just wanted to thank them once again for putting that on and helping out the Ryan Bennett Foundation.
Kels, should we head forward and talk to Ivan Salivary?
Yes, coming up next is Ivan Salivary. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pitbulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Militich as he squares off in a fight to the finish against Jiu-Jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the Columbus Razor Claws Bulldog, led by Mark Coleman, battling the Toronto Dragons, coached by Carlos Newton. Plus, the historic super match of Miletic versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League. Your sport. For more information, go to IFL.TV.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now is Ivan Salivary. Ivan, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Are you back home in Washington right now? Or?
Yes, I am. Beautiful Seattle.
Yeah. How's Seattle treating you? Is it pretty hot down there? I'm up in Vancouver, and it's been really hot the last couple weeks.
Yeah, man, it's been really nice, man, you know. Take as much of this as we can until the rain comes.
Yeah, no kidding.
So you guys are right next door to one another. Ivan, Kelsey's been exercising a lot lately, and I think you should invite him down to get a real workout. I think he's just been playing, you know, racquetball and doing aerobics and stuff. So maybe you should invite him down to train.
Absolutely.
An EMC.
Come roll around over here. Absolutely. It would be awesome.
Yeah, I should. I should teach you guys some of the finer points of racquetball. Ivan,
the racquetball backswing slash.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Those skills translate to mixed martial arts a lot. People don't realize. Ivan, the big news for you, of course, is the win over Art Santori at the WFA last weekend. What were your thoughts of the fight? Did it unfold in the manner that you wanted, a victory aside?
It was a good fight for me. I really enjoyed it. Art is a tough opponent, very unorthodox, and it was very difficult to watch his film and, like, really come up with a plan. But all in all, it was a situation that came about really well for me. He was switching back and forth on that on orthodox and on the southpaw, and luckily I was able to chop him down from there. And the WFA came out real nice. I really enjoyed, you know, fighting for them. It was really cool.
Ivan, one of my first impressions was when I saw your fight that you actually looked like a different fighter than the previous fights that we've seen you fighting in the UFC and other places, especially the leg kicks. Was that something that you had planned coming into the fight to use those leg kicks so effectively, or is this just something that we've never seen from you before?
Well, I tried to really train well-rounded. I mean, in that sense, I always try to do my grappling, the wrestling, the striking, all in a well-rounded manner. But as far as to Art specifically, yeah, we basically looked at situations that we can basically penetrate or chop him down from him switching. Because I knew he would be switching. I was like, get that lead leg every time that he steps on that lead leg, either which one, you know, chop it down and see what opens up.
Now, you're still training with Matt Hume at AMCI?
No,
you're not.
No, not at all. I have this new crew of friends that are really good, Eric Dahlberg from Demon Jiu-Jitsu and Brad Curtin, Roman Royberg out of Maurice Smith School. So we have a nice little crew. I mean, they're a little young, but at the same time, it's a nice fresh crew that I'm working with.
And so, does that mean no training down in California anymore? Are you going to go down there to prepare for fights?
I,
or?
I did train with Cheeto. I mean, the thing about it is that, you know, there's a lot of guys in California that I love to train with. And whenever Cheeto, like, wants me to go over and train with him in Big Bear, man, that's a great opportunity. So, right. You know, whenever I can, I go over there. It's a little difficult right now since I just had a kid and I'm right now working on my gym. So,
well, congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It's a little difficult, but all in all, I mean, to go down there, on, you know, 6,500, you know, feet above sea level and train with world-class fighters is an honor. It's a real privilege, truly.
Ivan,
sorry, Kels, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, Ivan, for yourself, fighting on the WFA, you know, and they were around before, but I think most people would say that this is a new WFA.
Yeah, did you remember the old WFA?
I do, yeah.
They were crazy.
Yeah.
They were awesome.
Yeah, so. Things change. But what were your thoughts on the fact that this card was somewhat billed as you know, fighters, ex-fighters from the UFC that maybe left on not the greatest terms or left, you know, sort of being regarded as talent that could threaten some of the UFC's main fighters, or just fighters from outside that have never competed in the UFC, like a Ryota Machida who's defeated Rich Franklin in the past. When they called you, did you sort of understand that maybe this was an angle they were playing?
Yes and no. I mean, the fact is that I knew the WFA guys for a long time. I've known them for years. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think that there's a lot of disgruntled fighters out there, or they're just really looking for their value. And that's what I think what's going on is that there is room for these organizations to come up and be able to, you know what I mean, if they have a good business situation, to hire world caliber fighters and fight in their organizations, and can compete with the market. There is a huge market out there that, you know, can be used by other than people from the UFC. And I hope that there will be more of them. It's better for the fighters, it's better for the sport, for, you know, these organizations to come up and be on, you know, pay-per-view, TV, get sponsors, mm-hmm. and the whole, you know, the whole thing for the popularity of the sport to get bigger.
Yeah.
Ivan, I'd like to ask you a question that we've been asking a lot of the fighters that we've interviewed over the past few months, and that has to do with this whole entertainment versus entertaining versus winning debate, and we've seen a lot of controversial fights, a lot of interesting decisions going one way and another, and we've seen a lot of debate about fighters who are considered to be quote unquote boring fighters having to defend their style. And you've run across the rocks in your fight against Nate Marquardt, and that fight was criticized as being a boring fight, and it didn't sort of unfold in the way that the promotion the UFC was expecting. To add to that, we were talking to Matt Lindland earlier this year, and he actually accused you of being a boring fighter or of running away from him during his fight. And it seems ironic, but what is your obligation as a fighter? What do you think about when you step into the ring? And how do you think about being entertaining? Do you think about only winning? And what do you think you should have to think about?
Well, it's a balancing game. It really is. It's a balancing game. Because in one hand, you want to be as entertaining as possible because that's what, you know, gives you your popularity with the fans. It gives you, you know what I mean, a cloud over in the promotion. I mean, it's great to be entertaining. But at the same time, you want to be a technical, careful fighter that doesn't go out there and guess what? All of a sudden you do some crazy techniques and get knocked out or choked out or whatever. So it's a balancing game. Yes, you want to be as entertaining as possible, impose your will on people, but at the same time, you don't want to be out there, you know, carelessly, you know, putting yourself at risk when, and at the same time, could really hurt your career in that sense. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for me, I mean, if for whatever reason people think I'm boring, I would suggest them to look at the Semenov fight, the Flickman fight, the Riggs fight, the Santori fight. I mean, there's a lot of fights out there that I think I hope that people think that are good fights. But yeah, once in a while, you will find, you know, a situation where two fighters, because of their styles, are not going to be as exciting as, you know, what the expectation. On the other hand, also, I find it that the American public is really, I mean, not to insult the American public whatsoever, but the American public really sometimes does not appreciate a very technical, slower fight. And that's the one thing that, you know, hopefully that will change, that people are going to be able to see two fighters be very technical, might be a little slower, and not as vulgar and bloody and crazy like other fights, but they will be able to appreciate it.
So do you think what has to happen? Would you advocate rule changes that allow fighters to take more risks in terms of going for more submissions and losing a dominant position? The sort of idea that if you go for a submission, you're close to finishing a fight, that counts more than sort of having a dominant position? Or do you think that you just need more education in the fans to understand, to break down the game and not just see two meatheads sort of bashing each other in the face for a round or two rounds?
To me, I believe it's education. It really is just a matter of a few years, you know, accumulating of people watching this on not just on pay-per-view, but on TV, and not just on these smaller channels, but on the bigger CBS, NBC, ABC type affiliates. I would love to see the MMA community be able to see these fights in the local channels. You know what I mean? Like they watch their basketball and their football. Mm-hmm. That would be fantastic. And all of a sudden you see millions of people watching this. And that's how a few years accumulated, then they'll see and they'll enjoy the fights. They'll know what they're watching. It isn't just two guys going in there beating the heck out of each other and seeing blood and that's what they enjoy. No. All of a sudden they're going to start seeing the techniques, how they set it up, the submissions, the rolling around, and seeing what is passing the guard and seeing how hard really that is, and that's, you know, accumulation of points. Man, it's just time. I truly believe it's time, and it will happen. And the more WFAs that are out there, the more IFLs that are out there, more small organizations that are coming up and becoming big organizations that, you know, push more people to become fans, the better.
Now, Ivan, there was a lot of speculation and rumors about when you left the UFC, what exactly transpired, whether or not you were offered a contract, whether or not they were happy with your last performance against Nathan Marquardt. Do you care to comment? I mean, this is, you know, from a fighter, from the fans' perspective, you beat Joe Riggs, you took out Anthony Frickland in very entertaining fights, and then you take on a fighter, Nathan Marquardt, who is known as being a very sort of methodical, stifling kind of fighter. Do you care to comment on your departure from the UFC and maybe try to clarify for your fans what exactly did transpire?
Sure. I mean, there's a few things there. I think we have to look at the UFC as the big monopoly, right? Where in that sense, the UFC has every leverage, every leeway to dictate your contract, dictate the terms, dictate whatever. They have complete control, and fighters do not have a lot of leverage. There's a situation that happened with Marquardt that, you know, once he popped for steroids, said, I talked to Dana personally, and he said, yes, I will get the rematch, according to what the commission says. The commission came out, basically suspended him for, like, you know, nothing, and nothing happened. And I got my contract negated because I lost, and that's what happens when the contract states it, you know, you have a 3-fight contract, but if you lose, they have the right to negate your contract, and then you have to renegotiate your contract. And normally, it is for lower because you lost. Mm-hmm. So your value goes down. I thought, because he popped for steroids, that my value shouldn't go down, and that I needed a rematch. So it transpired that way. And then the truth of the matter is, like, there's a lot of guys out there that are getting signed to these, like, 10-fight deals for, you know, 6 figures and blah, 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 blah. And you start calculating out, and you figure out that these guys are fighting for minimum wage, while the UFC is making millions and millions of dollars on, you know, filling out the MGM and the Mandalay Bay, filling out stadiums, filling out, you know, pay-per-view record sales, DVDs, national, international, I mean, sponsorships. I mean, you name it. They're making lots and lots of money, and the fighter is getting nothing. And they know it. They have leverage, and they control it that way.
Well, that's a very interesting comment, and actually, you're one of the few fighters who is brave enough to actually speak out, against those old style monopolies, because they really, I think, are bad for competition and bad for fighting. So it was nice to see the WFA and some people with business experience and acumen getting in and promoting and IFL, of course, you know, promoting fighters and promoting shows. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Ivan. You, many countries claim to have you as a sort of native son. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to being an MMA fighter.
Oh my gosh, I mean, I was born in Canada, Toronto, Canada. My mother and my sisters still live over there. We moved from there to Chile, and I lived there for a few years, and then my parents split, and I went with my dad to New York, and my mom and my sisters went back to Toronto. Lived in New York for a little bit, and then went over to Seattle. My dad got a job at Boeing, so we moved over to Seattle, and I've been here ever since 85. I started out of a wrestling background in high school a little bit, and then from there I went to the military, did a little bit of wrestling there, but I mean very minimal. But I've always wanted to go back into a pugilistic sport. I started doing jiu-jitsu after a long time off from sports, and I started loving it. I enjoyed fully jiu-jitsu. I started doing a little bit more grappling tournaments, and then I went over to the ANC over in Kirkland with Matt and, you know, Josh Barnett and, you know, Dennis Hallman and Jeff Munson. And we just had a great stable of guys. And from then we all kind of like had this like fervor to become bigger and better through the UFC, K1, Pride, or whatever organizations that we, you know, were thinking or dreaming about being in. And, you know, slowly it became the truth. I remember 10 years ago, running with Josh and going to have, you know, some Chinese food and dreaming about fighting for the UFC and dreaming about fighting for Pride and who would we fight and blah, 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 blah. And it was wonderful. We made our dreams come true.
Now, Ivan, my last question before I let you go. Do you know what's next for you in the WFA or outside the WFA? Do you have a fight scheduled? And if not, is there anyone out there that you would like to take on or a fight you'd like to see set up for yourself?
Not really. I mean, I'm in a position right now that the WFA is really taking care of me. They've been really nice to me. So I'm just going to ride this wave. And, you know, I have two more fights with them. We'll see what happens and go from there. I'm right now really focused on, you know, obviously my child, little Ivan, and, you know, my gym coming up. I have a Salivary MMA gym over on 8th and Thomas in downtown Seattle. So I'm just really focused right now and enjoying life. So there's not really truly anybody that I particularly have, you know, a yearning to fight other than probably Marquardt, because there's so many 185 pounders that are just phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Phenomenal. We're looking at guys, I mean, just up north, Dennis Kang, perfect example, awesome. Dave Terrell, awesome. You know what I mean? We're talking about these fabulous 185 pounders from Brazil to Japan, the States, that, I mean, really, they'll come. Eventually, they will come and they'll match us up.
Yeah, we can only hope. Brendan, you have anything else for Ivan?
A couple more questions. What do you think about a natural matchup inside the WFA between you and Mayhem Miller if he doesn't go to heavyweight, number one? And number two, how's becoming I'm a recent dad. I've just actually gotten over my post-traumatic stress from having my first child. But how has having a kid changed your life in terms of the way you fight and the way you spend your time, organize your time, and how does it affect you as a fighter?
Well, as far as the baby, we've been planning this, so I'm really, you know, I've been anticipating this for a long time. I just thank God that I had, you know, a beautiful son, healthy, have a great wife with, you know, I'm really fortunate right now, I'll tell you the truth. I've been, you know, having a situation, a streak of good luck, and, you know, hard work plays into it. But basically, I want everything to be in its place and in order, and I think that's what's going on right now. So, you know, a great situation with the gym, the home life, the kid. So things are thumbs up, you know. And it's not that difficult, as people may think, to be able to organize if you really wanted the situation. I really, you know, have scheduled myself time for working out, spending time at home, and working.
And the thought
as far as Mayhem Miller, yeah. We'll see what happens. The crazy old Jay said, man, he's just, you know, crazy. You guys are just, he's awesome, great guy. And if they do match us up, so be it. That'd be wonderful.
Would you be willing to do a dance before the fight yourself?
No.
Come on.
Come on, bro. I mean, I'm a good dancer. Don't get that twisted. I'm a great dancer. I can salsa like the best of them. But all in all, I want to remain a sportsman in this environment. And I know a lot of guys out there, especially in the WFA, they like entertainment value, and that's fine. I celebrate after my wins. You know what I mean? And if for whatever reasons people watch me and enjoy me, even better. But I'm not going in there with masks or chains or, you know, grills or, you know what I mean, break dances or belly dances or whatever. Heck, hell no. That's not me.
Well, Ivan, we appreciate you taking some time out and coming on the show to talk to us, and congrats once again on the win over Art Centauri.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Congratulations, Ivan.
Thank you.
Hey guys, Kelsey Mowat here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Mowat must be presented in business letter format in an aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Mowat before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing Full Contact Fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fightwear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets, to camo board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic Full Contact Fighter t-shirts, all your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a Full Contact Fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at fcfighter.com, or call us. Again, that number is 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. Joining us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio is John Alessio. Johnny, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Doing not
good,
bad.
Good.
Thanks. So, we were talking to you earlier. You're down in Ohio?
Yes. Yep.
Have you been doing some training down there?
Yeah, it's George Rizal's and Rich Franklin School.
Right.
Down there with Joe Riggs, Mac Danzig, and of course the mad scientist Billy Rush is getting us in the best shape possible.
Wow, have you trained with those guys before?
Is he trying to shrink you down to like 125 pounds or something?
Yeah, I thought I'd fight at 135 from now on. I don't need the diet part too much from him, but definitely the conditioning. I'm already like a pretty healthy eater, and I always have a decent time making weight, so I don't struggle like that. Definitely Joe Riggs needs that part, that's for sure, because he cuts a lot of weight.
Yeah, no doubt. So have you trained with Rich and George before? Is this the first time around for you to train with those guys?
I trained with George before out in Utah, getting ready for Diego when I was out there training. He was out there also. So I've got to roll with him before, and now our buddies are, and so I head down there for a little while.
And is this new to you, John? We were talking to Carl Parisian last week, I guess it was, and he had mentioned that he had trained with you as well. Where did you happen to train with him?
He came to our school here in California, where I'm normally at, Millennia Jiu-Jitsu, and he would come up about once or twice a week and train. So, yeah, I got to train with him, too. But now when I get ready for my fights, I'm able to, since this is my only job now, fighting, I'm able to travel and get ready for fights in other places where there's less distractions for me. So it works out really good.
John, you're set to take on Nick Diaz August 12th at the Warriors Cup in Stockton, California. Looking at Nick Diaz, I'm sure you're well familiar with his style and you've probably seen many of his fights. What kind of game plan are you looking at coming into that fight?
I want to keep it on my feet. I definitely think I'm better standing up than him. He's definitely an aggressive guy on his feet, and I think he's going to want to stand and bang with me too, so
on his feet. I mean, we saw it when he fought Robbie Lawler, and he had a good battle with Joe Riggs also. So, you know, he swings for the fences. He's definitely got height and a little bit of reach advantage on me, so I'm definitely going to be playing smart, but I think it's going to be pretty action-packed on in the stand-up part.
Yeah.
John, did Joe Riggs give you any advice on any post-fight smack-talking or post-fight hospital fighting?
Yeah, well, I knew all about that. I mean, because I trained with Riggs as he was getting ready for that fight. We were training together. And even now, you know, it's great to train with a guy that fought up for three rounds, you know. So, like, Joe has been able to give me advice as far as, like, hey, this was working for me. Hey, he's good at this. Don't do this kind of thing. So we've been developing a game plan. And, you know, I've seen Nick fight a bunch of times. But, of course, I've been watching the fights on tape over and over, really studying him. You know, his stand-up, he really likes the lead hook, and he throws awkward, you know, side kicks and axe kicks and spinning kicks standing up and stuff like that. So he's dangerous with his unorthodox style.
Now, you mentioned you expect that Nick will probably want to stand with you, or he wouldn't be surprised if he wants to stand with you, and he's known as having some great ground skills. But outside of that, are you fairly confident? I mean, coming off a fight where you gave Diego Sanchez all he could handle and he had extreme difficulties taking you down, virtually couldn't take you down, do you think Diaz has the ability to take you down if he decided to take it to the mat?
Honestly, I don't. I think there's going to have to be a banana peel on that mat for me to slip on, for him to get on top of me. But, you know, a fight's a fight, and you know, if he disguises a takedown well with some strikes, he could get it to the ground. I'm training for everything. I mean, I'm training being off my back. I'm training being on top of him. I'm training for everything, but I really think he's going to earn a takedown. I mean, it's not going to come easy. I mean, I think I've proved that I'm one of the hardest welterweights to get to the mat if I don't want to be there. And I also have great abilities to get off my back when I am put on my back. So, but, you know, I've been doing jiu-jitsu now for 8 years. So, I mean, if, you know, we can have a jiu-jitsu match if we really want. But, you know, I'd rather keep it where I'm most comfortable. So that'll be my game plan, is to definitely counter the takedowns.
Yeah.
John, would you be less worried about being taken down by Nick Diaz, seeing as his game on the ground looks completely different than someone like Diego Sanchez, who would be very, you know, who would be powerful and could actually hold people down rather than you know, go on the ground and work for submissions and not so much ground and pound? Would you be willing to avoid that more, or is that worry you just as much as someone who's a powerful sort of ground and pounder like Sanchez?
I think this fight is going to be, I'll be able to let go a lot more on my feet and not have to worry about the strong takedown skills, where, you know, as Diego, going into that fight, he took everybody down and he kept them down. So, you know, I was like, okay, you know, this guy's for real with his takedowns, he's for real with his base and his ground and pound, so I need to be, you know, very cautious of the takedown. Unfortunately, I ended up being a little too cautious, and I regret it now, but this fight, you know, I think I'll be able to swing for the fences a little more, and I don't think Nick Diaz really has the ability to hold me and pin me down if, you know, if he really wanted to. So it definitely, I'll be able to, I'm not worried about it as much at all.
John, when you look at both yourself and Nick Diaz, two guys that are freshly fought for the UFC not too recently, and when I talked to you last after the loss to Diego, you had spoken about the fact that you thought you could have been a little bit more aggressive, that maybe you thought you could have been awarded that fight on the cards. Has your mind changed at all since you, have you seen the fight again? Do you still stand by that you think you won that fight against Sanchez?
Absolutely. I mean, here's how I break it down. Okay, they call it, in the rules, the judging is effective aggressiveness. Okay, well, he might have been more aggressive, but where in the hell was he ever effective? Nothing was effective. Not one. He got me down one time, and I think I was on the mat for under 5 seconds when I easily stood back up. So there was, and now let's talk about the wrestling part of the game, the control. Okay, well, isn't countering the takedown just as much as taking somebody down? Well, I totally neutralized his wrestling abilities and made his wrestling look like he never wrestled. getting stitched up, you know? So I really don't understand. Okay, well, so I went on damage. I think I controlled the fight. I put the fight where I wanted it to be. He didn't want it to be there at all. And then the aggressiveness part, his aggressiveness wasn't effective. I neutralized it. And yes, okay, I know I should have been more aggressive. And I see where I went wrong, but I still think I won the fight, absolutely. He didn't want that fight to go that way at all. And then here's another thing. When he takes my back for 2 minutes and 45 seconds, he's on my back for, who's the one trying the submission? Me. I'm trying to break his arm on my neck, for crying out loud. I was doing anything possible I could, you know, to try to. But why did the ref not break that up? It was new. It was like a stalemate. He was just sitting on my back. He was landing a couple of rabbit punches. I threw a couple of punches back. None of those punches are effective. So it would be like if I was in his guard and I was doing like little rabbit punches to him and holding him down, they would have stood us back up. So how were those punches weren't doing me any damage, you know what I mean? Like he was just hitting me in the side like with no power. So just should have broke it up. And here's the thing, like I was fighting a game plan. First two rounds, I thought I fought him pretty much perfectly to how I wanted to. The third round, okay, I was going to turn it up. And that's the round. And before he took my back, if you notice, I threw a head kick, and then I threw the flying knee. I was pressing the fight. That I knew the third round, I was like, okay, here we go. Let's go for now. And I started, but then he ended up took my back, so he stopped my aggressiveness there. But I don't think people thought that I was going for the kill, but I was. You know, the head kick, the flying knee, I was starting to pick up the pace. Because I knew he was starting to fold when it came to the stand-up part. And mentally, I think I was breaking him because he didn't want to be standing up with me that whole time. He wanted it on the ground where he feels comfortable. So, I don't know. That's my opinion. But apparently three judges saw it differently.
John, where are you right now in terms of your relationship with the UFC? You know, a lot of people thought that was your debut in the UFC. But even though you're a young guy, you've been fighting for a long time, and you've actually fought Pat Miletich in the UFC. And what number it was, but back in, you know, it was back in the day, 2000 or something like that. So what's your relationship with the UFC now, and are you still on good terms with them? Are they going to have you back? What kind of contract do you have, and where are you going to go after this next fight with Diaz?
Yeah, well, I'm still under contract with the UFC. I got two fights left on my contract. The Diaz fight came up. It was one of those situations where it was a good money. It was a good, really good payday to go fight Nick in this other show. So my manager talked to the UFC. They said no problem because they weren't going to have anything for me in August anyways. You know, it was probably going to be like maybe later September or something. So they gave their blessing for me to go ahead, which was, you know, great on their part. So that was nice. But so I do have two fights left with them. I think, you know, they were slightly disappointed in the fact that I wasn't super aggressive because they've seen that I stopped his takedowns. They've seen what I can do, but they're like, well, why didn't you go for the kill kind of thing? But then again, that goes to where my game plan was. The third round is when I was going to try to go for the kill, but, you know, he took my back and rode me like a mule for 3 minutes. But yeah, I still got two flights left. I'm looking forward to getting back in there, and I'm going to let it all hang out. I know now, that was a huge confidence booster. I mean, fighting Diego. I mean, I've fought a lot of guys, but, you know, Diego's their new poster boy. He's this, he's that, he's supposed to be so good. I mean, honestly, he didn't seem that physically strong to me. He didn't seem that anything to me. I think he was even more tired than I was. So I'm like, I can hang with anybody in that octagon, so I just need to let it go and just start dropping fools.
Now, looking ahead to Diego's next fight, it is with Caro Parisian, and we spoke to Caro a great deal about this, but for yourself, having trained with Caro and as well fought Diego, do you have a call on that fight?
You know, I mean, it definitely won't be like my fight with Diego. It's going to be on the ground. And they're going to be scrambling and going for submission. I think it's going to be a great match on the ground. Kind of, I think it's going to resemble Nick Diaz and Sanchez in a way of, the way they were scrambling a lot. I don't know if Diego's going to be able to hold Carl down like he wants to. But I do think this match don't think their stand-up skills are, you know, anything to brag about. So both of those guys, you know, want to take the fight to the ground. You know, Diego's got the double leg, and then Carl's got the throws. Submission-wise, you know, I think they're pretty even. I think it's really going to come down to who wants it more. You know, who trained harder, who really wants it. But I think it's going to be a great fight, personally. I'm going to be there for it. I can't wait.
Yeah.
It should be me versus Carl, but, you know. and which would have been awkward. It would have been weird fighting Carl, you know, because, you know, we're not super close, but, you know, we have trained together, and we do talk on the phone every once in a while, and, you know, so it would have been awkward, but.
John, that was one of my questions for you. It seems that the more schools that you train with, the more places you train with, the better or the more well acquainted you become with a lot of fighters. And even though there's a lot of new fighters coming up, it seems like there are sort of certain hot spots in local centers where a lot of fighters collide and train together. You know, what's your thinking about this? Is there any fighters who you'd be apprehensive about fighting at 170? And do you see more of this sort of conflation and localization of fighters going on? Where now we hear, you know, every few fighters say, you know, I'm not going to fight this guy or I can't fight this guy. What do you think about that? Is there anyone that you won't fight?
I mean, yeah, Joe Riggs. I mean, we're way too close now. Like, we're, like, really good friends. I mean, you know, I went to his wedding. You know, we're, like, we're tight. You know, we're real good boys now. So Joe Riggs would be a guy who I'd pass that up. The only way I could see myself fighting Joe was if we're fighting for the welterweight championship. We're like, hey, you know what? And it's a big payday kind of thing. You know what? Hey, we're fighting for a title. The payday's good. You know, let's just go out there and have fun. You know, see what happens, you know? But, you know, I mean, I'll fight anybody else that I've trained with, really. Other than, of course, like, the guys at my local gym where I've been at for years, you know? But everybody else that I just go and cross-train with, you know, I'll fight them. I mean, it's just business, you know? We can help each other get ready for fights. If we got to fight each other, then... Hey, that's the way it works, and, you know, I mean, so I've came to terms with that. I got no problem with it.
So then that would mean that as well, if you have two reasons to go out and watch the next Ultimate Fight Night, because Joe Riggs is fighting Jason Von Flew that night, and your call on that fight, I'm assuming you're going to go with Riggs?
Riggs by murder. Von Flew might do decent, but... I mean, especially since I've trained with Joe, I know what the man is capable of. And as long as he goes in there 100% mental, that man can take over the weight division. You know, he is super strong. He's got great hands. His submission ability is awesome now compared to what people think his submission is. He's got great submission skills. His jiu-jitsu is really good, and he's a two-time All-American wrestler. So, I see him dismantling Von Flu any way he wants, as quick as he wants it to go. It's just one of those things where he just has to dictate that fight.
Do you think he has something to prove after that? Some would say unexpected loss in his last fight to Mike Swick.
Definitely. I mean, especially the critics. You know, he wants to prove them wrong. You know, like he had a bad performance. You know, went into it maybe slightly a little unprepared mentally, physically, and cart conditioning wise, and everything. He was ready, and I think if he fought Swick again, it would be a completely different story. I was absolutely shocked. I'm not taking anything away from Swick. I know the guy trains hard. He's improved 100%. He's a tough guy, but I was shocked.
he wanted
to go out there. This is a rebuilding fight for Joe. He needs to go out there, dismantle this guy, get the confidence back, and then,
He did have his hand up, but was that high kick the one that ended it for him, you think?
No, you know, I sat down and I told him, like, how did the head kick feel, you know, to rock you in any way? He's like, no, I was just off balance, and made it look on tape like, you know, it rocked him the way he's kind of stepped to the side funny, but he was just off balance when he got hit, so that didn't hurt him at all, but he said when he shot in and it was just far away, you know, he said he felt him going for the guillotine and just, you know, and like tried, just one of those mental things, you know, where he just kind of froze up mentally and had too much stuff on his mind, and, you know, when really you should only have one thing on your mind, and that's dismantling your opponent. But, you know, I mean, everybody, you know, has, I mean, that's just a growing, he's just going to grow from that, you know. You learn more when you lose. You learn more about yourself, your heart, where you're at. So, I mean, watch him come out now. Watch him destroy Von Flew and whoever they put him in against next. You know, he's just going to get better and better.
Is Joe going to be in your corner in Stockton, California? Is it a potential for some real fireworks here with the Diaz boys and Johnny Alessio and Joe Riggs?
Oh, I'm making sure Joe's there. Absolutely. We're going to have fireworks, that's for sure. I wanted to make sure that this is the talk of the town after this.
Is this show going to be on TV anywhere, do you know?
You know what, I don't think so, but I could be wrong, because I don't even know who's on the card, to be honest with you. I'm that out of it right now that I'm just staying focused. I'm just training for him. I think his brother's on the card from what I hear, but other than that, I don't even know who's fighting, because to me, there's only one fight that really matters, and that's my fight. So.
Well, he'll definitely have some hometown support, I would think, it being in his hometown of Stockton.
Oh, good, that's awesome. They can fool me all they want, but when Nick Diaz crumbles to the mat, who are they going to be cheering for now? So, I mean, Nick's a great fighter, and I respect his skills in the ring, but he's got a trash of a mouth. He's a kind of a punk. You know, I want to make a statement with him. I want to finish him. The guy seems to be very hard to finish. You know, he's got all these decisions. Whether he wins or loses, their decisions, you know, I don't think he's finished a guy in a while, except for that Japanese guy they put in with him in the UFC who had no business, but, for me, I want to stop the fight. I want to stop Nick Diaz, and I'm going to do everything I can to do it. I'm tired of judges. I don't want to judge. I got screwed by the judges, and if I'm going to be in his hometown, you know, I got that strike against me right there, so I got to finish him.
Brendan, do you have anything else for John?
That's it for me, Kels. Thank you very much for coming on, John. I hope we can maybe see some greasy, pirated cam recording of this fight on the internet at some point.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're going to be taping it and doing DVDs and everything like that, so it'll be, like, taped professionally and all that.
Well,
so
we can legitimately own it then, even better.
Yeah,
everybody will be able to get to see the fight, for sure, and I'll make sure of that.
All right, John.
I want everybody to see me beat him.
We appreciate you taking time out, and best of luck. August 12th against Nick Diaz at the Wires Cup, Johnny Alessio versus Nick Diaz. Thanks again for coming on the show, John.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, John. Good luck.
Can I thank a sponsor real quick?
Go ahead.
Cool? Please.
Go ahead.
All right. I wanted to thank United by Lending Mortgage Company. They helped me a lot. They make it possible for me to travel around and train. Of course, the Warrior Wear. Big thanks to them, TraumaCenter.com, what am I missing here? Oh, big sponsor right here, A&G Auto Sound, Custom Sound, thank you very much for the support.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon, John.
All right, take care.
Thanks, John.
Mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pitbulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Milicic as he squares off in a fight to the finish against Jiu-Jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the Columbus Razor Club, led by Mark Coleman, battling the Toronto Dragons, coached by Carlos Newton. Plus, the historic supermatch of Milicic versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League. Pure sport. For more information, go to IFL.TV.
Brendan, yet another impressive episode for us, I would have to say. Johnny Alessio and Ivan Salivary with some interesting comments. And, you know, with Alessio, I'm getting excited about that fight against Nick Diaz.
Well, hopefully at some point in our lives we'll be able to get to see that fight against Nick Diaz, because, again, two really exciting fighters. Diaz is always great to watch. So, you know, there's always there's always some kind of he brings his great fighting style, but there's always, of course, an air, you know, a 50-foot air of entertainment surrounding him as well, whether it be you know, a pre-fight, post-fight, on the telephone, in the hospital, in the emergency room, wherever.
Yeah, well, he's a powder keg. Nice. That's why.
What's that?
He's a powder keg. Any
a
fight
powder keg.
Yeah, any fight he's involved in, you know, win or lose, you don't really know what's. You're right. You never know if the drama is going to what drama is going to unfold afterwards.
Yeah, and that's you know, almost makes for good TV, good radio. We'll see. Hopefully, there is a finish to that fight. It would be nice. And Alessio, I think Alessio hit the nail right on the head, and he's tough to finish. And that's one of the things that we actually haven't seen yet, I don't think.
Well, and to be fair to Nick Diaz, and talking about the smack talking, I mean, hey, like, John wasn't exactly for, he wasn't for a loss of words either.
Yeah, that's the way it's going to go, I hope.
Yeah.
It will be good. Hopefully they'll get that DV out so we can buy it as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, with Ivan Salivary, some pretty... I guess harsh is not overstating it. Some pretty harsh comments from him directed towards the UFC.
Well, I think you know, it could work out for fighters. You know, this is such a new discipline, and these guys are really out on their own. If you get injured, you know, during a fight, I think you're covered to some extent, but you know, it's very difficult to say you know, that someone's going to be looking out for your ass while you're training. Or and really, you know, what happens if you have a big contract? If you have a big fight contract and you get injured training, certainly you're not covered as a result of that. And I think a lot of these issues have been rehashed time and time again for all sorts of professional athletes who don't fight inside of organized unions. So pro wrestlers have had this problem for a long time, and I guess they're not professional athletes in the same way that mixed martial artists are, but they certainly have... some occupational hazards, and it's very, very difficult. So I think these are getting down to fundamental labor management issues, and should I think Salivary and a number of other fighters have been very outspoken that fighters require some kind of protection, they require some kind of organization, and I'm sure none of the big shows or none of the even little shows are at all interested in that. So, and again, it's, you know, there's so much. There's so much power in each individual big organization that I'm sure they can go to great lengths to blackball fighters and all sorts of things if they chose to, you know. So it's tough. It will be interesting to see what happens and what comes out of any attempt to talk about organization and fighter protection.
Well, yeah, and kind of as a on that same sort of thread, to be honest, you know, I thought it was interesting to hear from Alessio that he still does have two fights with the UFC, that they actually agreed to him fighting Nick Diaz outside of the UFC in the Warriors Cup. When I first saw that fight was announced, that he was going to fight Diaz, my first inclination was that, for whatever reason...
That he kicked out of the UFC.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I thought, well, what, you know, when I talked to John after his fight with Sanchez, he told me at that point that he had been assured he'd be returning, but then when I heard this about this fight with Diaz, yeah, you're right, that was my first thought, was, I guess they've canceled that. And I don't know what the status is on that. Do you, Brendan? Do you know if the UFC still has the ability to, even if you're signed a three fight deal, can they still sort of cancel the contract if you lose?
I'm not sure. I guess maybe that would depend on each individual fighter's contract, I imagine, and what kind of management, what their managers organize for them. But who knows? Maybe you don't necessarily look at the contract. You look at their actions. And I think if you're exciting, the UFC tended to keep you around a little bit more in the last year. And maybe we're seeing a shift now that they have so many more shows and there's a little bit more recognition that good fighters are going to lose. And that's no reason that they have to lose their jobs or their status as professionals, that maybe they're becoming more accepting of that. And I've always been a big advocate of that. You know, I like to see great fights, and I like to see great fighters take chances in their fights and not fight so conservatively. So I think that's something that has to be rewarded in order to change change fighters' habits.
Well, yeah, and I thought it was interesting that Joe Riggs is on the next Ultimate Fight Night, and I was happy because he's an entertaining fighter. He's always good for some interesting comments as well. And I would bet that regardless of who wins the fight on between Alessio and Diaz. Well, I shouldn't say regardless. I would think that if Diaz does win the fight against Alessio, I would not be surprised if he's also brought back to the UFC.
No, I don't think so either.
Another thing I wanted to mention before we get out of here is the upcoming K1 Heroes Tournament on August 5th, and there's some interesting matchups coming up on that. Sakuraba is going to be fighting a Lithuanian fighter. I know I'm going to pronounce his first name wrong. Kastutis Smirnova, who supposedly has a record of 16-5. I don't know anything about him. Do you know anything about Smirnova?
I've never heard his name mentioned.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's sometimes what happens with these Japanese organizations. They pull out of a resource pool in Europe, which is great. And, you know, obviously Pride has demonstrated time and time again that there's a great pool of fighters to be pulled from Europe. And, you know, at the time, sometimes we don't know anything about them. And then you look at some of the great names that have come out of Europe. And maybe that's going to be the case here with K1 and Smirnova. Shungo Aoyama is going to be taking on Rodrigo Gracie. And then everyone is reporting Carlos Newton versus Melvin Manhoef. And I was working on a story for my Northern Touch column, my Canadian column on Full Contact Fighter. And I don't want to spoil that column too much, but I did talk to Carlos. And as it stands right now, he seemed to indicate to me that fight might be up in the air.
That's very interesting. So a big chunk of their card could be falling apart, it looks like. So we have no Yamamoto anymore now. It looks like Yamamoto is reported to be pursuing an Olympic wrestling career, so he might be out of the MMA scene for a couple of years, mm-hmm. And it looks like Genki Sudo is injured as well.
Yeah, so that's too bad about Kid Yamamoto. I was always kind of hoping for some kind of matchup down the road. You know that sooner or later you would think that K1 and Pride might start doing some joint cards. Who knows? I mean, K1 is one of their major competitors now. And it would have been, you know, to hear that he could be out of MMA for a while, somewhat disappointing coming from a mixed martial arts fan's point of view, that, you know, you might not see the great matchups there. Yamamoto versus Genki Sudo or, you know, Cal Uno, Gomi, all the great lightweights that could have fought Yamamoto, although I guess Gomi would have maybe been a bit too big for Yamamoto, but they still probably could have come to a mutual agreement on a weight.
Well, even the more natural fit of the UFC and K1 exchanging a couple of lightweight fighters would have been fabulous as well.
Mm-hmm. And a couple other Canadians are going to be fighting on that K1 card. Ivan Menjivar, who's one of Canada's better 145-pounders and really one of the world's better 145-pounders, many would say, he's going to be fighting Adeo Tocoro, who his main claim to fame in the last couple of years is his draw against Hoyce Gracie.
Yeah, that fight was a terrible fight for Gracie. Tocoro really actually manhandled him a little bit in the fight, and it was an incredibly boring fight. And more props to him, you know, props to him for going in, doing softening him up for the Matt Hughes fight.
And then Coulter Gill is going to be fighting, I believe, Cal Uno. But again, I think some of the elements of this card are still sort of being finalized, and you have to wonder if there's going to be some problems as far as putting together the final card, because we're only a week away. It'll be less than a week, 6 days.
This seems to be, unfortunately, going back to the old style of Pride and K1 matchmaking, where you get your opponent 2 weeks before, and then that opponent is changed, and then they fly you in a day before, so. You know, you're fighting at the equivalent of, 5 o'clock a.m. of your time, or in the middle of the night, or something like that.
Yeah, it definitely would not be an easy transition.
Shouldn't be completely alien to some North American fighters, but they're probably not as drunk as they would be if they were fighting at 4 in the morning.
It's true, and Ivan Menjivar, I think, is one of the Canadian fighters originally from El Salvador, and I think that there is a guy who he had the one fight in the UFC against Matt Serra. He looked very tiny. He usually fights at 145. He looked very tiny against Matt Serra, but I think that's one Canadian fighter that somewhat flies under the radar a little bit here in North America, because he doesn't get a lot of action. He hasn't been in the UFC recently, etc. But that is definitely a Canadian fighter that people should look out for, I would say.
Well, he's a fabulous fighter, and I think there's a lot of guys, people are making big wind as we have been, and as I have been, especially the return of the 155s, and you can still go down in that, another notch to one. There's tremendous 145ers, and I know a lot a lot of real natural 145ers are just sucking it up and fighting it, well, usually at 170, but a couple in the last few years, but now at 155. But there's really a whole other tier below that we could see in even more competitive fights at.
Yeah, especially in some of the Japanese organizations, you know, right away a name like Yamaguchi comes to mind, and sometimes he fights at 135 sometimes, so if I'm not mistaken. So definitely there's a whole, you know, plethora of talent that could be used. I think it's just a matter of expanding mixed martial arts awareness, making mixed martial arts a bigger and more mainstream sport, particularly in North America, so that we can eventually get to the point where you have, you know, those many weight divisions. But I think right now it's going to be, from what I understand, from talking to people like Mark Hominick, who's, you know, publicly pleaded the UFC to bring in a bantamweight or featherweight division, whatever you want to call it, 145, there's no plans from the UFC, at least, to do that in the meantime.
Well, I think it's not as, you know, the more and more cards they have, they could probably think about it, but it wasn't as an important as decision as bringing in the 155s, because
yeah,
the 155 to 170 jump is just enormous. Like you're talking about, you know, completely different body type going 155 to 170, but 145 to 155 is just not quite as profound. So I don't know if that's going to be as pressing an issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brendan, I'm going to let you get out of here. I know you got stuff to do, and so do I. So we'll talk to you soon. And thanks again for coming on the show.
Okay, you say bye, Kelsey.
Bye.
Bye, Franny. I think that's the best end to the show yet, man.
Bye-bye, Kelsey.
Okay, take care.